Folks, I always start these shows the same way. I say, hello there and welcome to Blind Like Me. I've got to come up with some new greeting to do. I don't know what it'll be, but surely someone will send me something. My name is Phil Parr. You probably already knew that, but Malia Dubé is our guest today, and we have her on the phone from Canada. How are you?
Hello.
You're in what part of, what area of Canada?
I am in northeastern Ontario in Sudbury. It's a fairly good-sized city, and it's known for mining, nickel mining, and it's the nearest Great Lake to us would be Lake Huron.
And it is one thing up there. It is cold.
Very. Right now it's snowing and blowing outside again.
Snowing and blowing again.
Yeah.
Again. You say again like it's been doing this for days, hasn't it?
Oh, off and on. Either it warms up a bit and we get some snow, or it's down way, way down below 0 Fahrenheit and very, very bitterly cold.
So give me what you think the temperature is right now.
Let's see. When I listened to the weather this morning, they said it was supposed to be minus 19 Celsius, I believe, which would be right down there somewhere around in the teens or the single digits in Fahrenheit.
Which is too cold for old Texas boy like me. My blood's too thin.
Me too.
I'd just have to drink a lot more whiskey if I was up there, wouldn't I?
Good idea.
Give me kind of a reason to drink. That's why I've been looking for a reason to drink all my life.
Well, it's cold up here, I'll tell you.
That'd do it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you don't sound like it bothers you too much. Have you lived there most of your life, all your life?
No. I was born in Upper New York State in a city called Binghamton.
Binghamton, all right. I haven't been there, but I know of it.
I'm an immigrant to Canada.
An immigrant to Canada. Now, what is your level of vision?
None.
Absolutely.
I have no light perception.
None whatsoever?
No.
You have artificial eyes?
I have my own eyes. I lost my vision, what I did have. I was always visually impaired, but I lost my sight when I was 16.
When you were 16?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
My retina's detached, and there were several other things that happened, and I don't know the name of the eye conditions that I had when I was born, but I never did have too much vision. I could, out of my left eye, I could see enough to read large print with a magnifying glass, and my right eye, I had light perception. But that was about it.
But you never were what they call perfect sighted or saw perfect.
No, not even close.
That's when people talk about seeing perfect. I don't know if there's any such thing, but
know.
You never got that close, huh?
No, I could see enough to see colors and shapes and I said, read large print with a magnifier, but my parents knew eventually that I would be probably losing my sight at some point. So when I started to learn to read, I started Braille as well. So I went to both systems, public school and residential school.
And so you always knew that, or did you realize when you were a child that someday you might actually be?
I mean, they did. The ophthalmologists and my parents did. But, it kind of took me by surprise a bit when, putting it lightly, when my retina's detached, it was quite the year, if I remember correctly.
I would imagine so for a 16-year-old. A 16-year-old being a 16-year-old is a a rather traumatic time in people's lives anyway, and then to have that on top of being 16 would be rough.
It wasn't easy. But I did have very supportive family and friends. And by that point, I was going to the School for the Blind, so in Batavia, New York. Let's see, we're kind of going all over the place, but
We want to talk about when you were small. Of course, you didn't have good vision. Your vision was bad. Did they start you out in public?
Yes, they did, and it's pretty. I always find it interesting to hear the stories that you have on the air of people that have gone to public school and residential school, or both, or mixtures. You know.
Yeah.
I think I was one of the first visually impaired people to be integrated into the public school system in my particular area. I know I didn't meet any other children who were blind or visually impaired for quite a few years when I was in school. And so I know my mother told me fairly recently that my dad and she fought very hard to get me in there, into public school.
Yeah, because of course now we have the term, we've coined the term mainstreaming, and that's what they do with blind children.
Right, yeah.
But then that was, these are long years ago.
Oh, yeah, this was in the early 60s.
Yeah,
so, you know, as far as I know, I was maybe the first. I don't know. There could have been a few others besides me, but we really didn't have any contact. I've heard several people say this about their school experiences. I didn't meet any other blind or visually impaired kids my own age really a lot until at 11 I got a chance to go to a camp for blind people to have in Vermont.
Yeah.
And people from all over the states and some from Canada and everybody, we all went there. It was a fairly big camp. And I'd never seen other blind or visually impaired children really all that much until that point.
But at that time, you still had what sight you had. You could still read, and you could still, you were still quite sight dependent.
To an extent, I listened to talking books and I read Braille too. I kind of had a mixture of all three. Of course, you know, there wasn't as much stuff available back then.
Oh no, there wasn't.
Format. So, yeah, I did use my magnifier a lot and read books in print. I've always been an avid reader, so anything I could get to read, I read, whether it be on the old talking book machines, the records, you know.
Yeah.
Used to get them sent in the mail, and Braille books, and my mom and dad used to read to me, too, so I've always been a really avid reader. That's one of my main hobbies, I think.
And how did you get instruction in Braille in the public school?
Itinerant teacher. Sent one in when I was, I think it was first grade or second grade. I can't remember exactly. But it was an older lady.
Uh-huh.
And we worked for maybe an hour or two a day, a couple of days a week. And so, I mean, my Braille didn't get good until... I had to be at least 10 or 11 before I could really read grade 2 well. And but it did help. I mean, and that was probably another thing that my parents had to really push for as well, I would imagine.
To get someone to teach you Braille and for you to learn that. So you had to learn print. All right, normal writing, and then Braille on top of that.
Yeah.
So
the only thing I never did learn how to write in cursive writing. You know, like the, I could sign my name, but by the time they figured it would be a useful skill, I was already fairly up there in the grades, like maybe fifth or sixth grade, something like that. And I just thought, well, it was just too hard. I can print, but I can't write very well.
And you, in these fifth or sixth, the first few grades, sixth grade, say, of school, you had sighted little girlfriends, and you had parties
I'm from a family of, I have three other siblings, an older sister, an older brother, and a younger brother.
Yeah.
My younger brother was in the same school as I was, And my mom worked in the cafeteria at the school, so, you know, I always had family around and friends of my brothers and friends of both of us, because we're fairly close in age.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I had, basically sighted friends right up through until I went to the school for the blind in ninth grade. When I was starting high school.
In the ninth grade. So this, but you were already, by the time your sight completely went,
mm-hmm.
you were in already in a school for the blind, so you knew other other blind children, and you at least knew that it could be done.
True. I mean, I remember there was one girl there the year before I lost my sight. I don't know what her eye condition was or why. She had quite a bit more sight even than I did, and she had lost her vision the year before I did. So I knew, I knew it could be done, you know. It was good that I was in the place I was in. I know I didn't like residential so much.
Gee, imagine that.
Yeah.
I don't think any of us liked it at all. It was very confining. It was like going to prison.
It was
horrible.
It truly, compared to the experience that I'd had for the previous years of living in a family situation and being close to, you know, all my aunts, uncles, cousins, and stuff like that, it was really, really different. I should say that things weren't too bad in public school either, right until about around seventh or eighth grade. Middle school, things started to get tough. Not because of the work, it was the social stuff. My sight was going, although I didn't know it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was having more mobility problems and stuff. And to make a long story short, that age, that 12, 13, 14-year-old age, that's when kids start to figure out that some kids are a little bit different. And if they are, oh, boy.
Kids can be awfully cruel to other kids.
And that was... So in a way, because I'd had this experience at camp before,
mm-hmm.
and in a way, I was almost kind of glad to get away from all that stuff that was going on at public school and go to the school for the blind, and I was kind of almost looking forward to it till I got there.
I think all of us were. I remember going back in September and being anxious to see all my buds.
Oh, yeah.
And anxious to see what they'd done for the summer and the new words they'd learned and the new things that had gone on. But then that came that Monday.
Mm.
And of course, I wasn't a good student, and I think from talking to you, you were. You were
there.
Yeah, you excelled. But you still, you had no choice in what we were fixing for supper.
Yeah.
You couldn't say at 9 o'clock at night, can I have a little ice cream before I go to bed?
Oh, it's definitely the time restrictions. Because my family weren't, we had a schedule and stuff like that because, of course, my dad worked and my mom worked and we weren't that rigid.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't have to get up at the same time every single day except when you went to school. But on the weekends, it was, kind of easy going stuff. And we did a lot of, we had a camp, a fishing camp, and my family is very into a lot of outdoor activities, camping and stuff like that. And that, it's kind of a laid back, more laid back lifestyle.
Sure.
And then when you got to school, and the food was just awful. I'm sorry, but I know they're cooking for a whole bunch of people, but yuck. Yeah, compared to home cooking, it was not good.
I've thought a lot about blind schools. Of course, I went to one. I don't know. I know they're better now. And
yeah.
But I do know people that have gone to boarding schools that just had a wonderful time, that loved it.
I did too. I had the best of both, really.
Yeah.
I had just many good times. They did bad. I'll just try to highlight a few things. The one thing that I think was really a boost for me in my public school, there was no way that I could ever compete in any kind of sports or anything like that. Not because they didn't let me go to gym class or anything. It was just, I just wasn't fast enough to get on the teams. So there, I participated in track and field and got into the whole wrestling cheerleading thing. And, you know, it gave me a chance to do things that I wouldn't normally have been able to do. So that was a good thing, the sports.
Yeah.
And we had a contest that one of our history teachers got us into when I was, I think I was in 10th or 11th grade. I can't remember. Anyway, it had to do with a debate team.
Yeah.
And we won a trip to Washington, D.C.
Oh, wow.
This program called Presidential Classroom.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and I got to go to Washington for a whole week and see all the sights down there and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there was the music, which, you know, I when we were talking before, I told you I always liked music. So
you're a singer.
Amateur, very amateur.
Uh-huh.
But you know, I got involved with choir, and I got involved with there was a dance band at school and stuff like that. Not a band like would compete. But a regular band that played gigs and stuff. So that
played a little rock and roll.
Yeah, like the old CCR stuff.
And so they did they let you sing with them? The band?
Yeah, and play guitar and stuff like that. And it was a lot of fun. And you know, so I got involved in a lot of activities at school that I probably wouldn't have if I would have stayed in public school, high school. I did go to. They started a program. My last couple of years there, they started a program for some of us to go to take classes at the local high school in Batavia, as well as our classes at the School for the Blind, and I got a chance to do that too. The only bad part of it was there was no time for any social life. That was what I missed. Is the teenage social life thing, you know, going out to dances and going out to movies and going out to, you know, like just dating and stuff like that. That's what you miss. But my brother and my older sister and my older brother, they all did these kind of things. We didn't have that. So even though we were in class with all these kids who were going to a regular high school, there wasn't any social time. You didn't get to know any of them, you know. So would have been better, I think, if they would have let us participate in some of the activities, the after-school stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But you're blind. You can't expect those kids.
Yeah, I know.
I tell you what, let's take a little short break, and we'll be back and talk a little more about your singing in high school and your participation in athletics. They didn't let girls do that at the Texas School for the Blind.
Oh, okay.
I guess they did with you. And so we're back in just a minute with more Blind Like Me.
Facts about blind folks. Information you probably never need. Titillating tidbits to make you think on the blind side. Here's Mark Christie.
Tom Lay was a 1987 National Federation of the Blind scholarship winner, and he has been an active member of the organization and a leader of the Louisiana affiliate and the student division. He grew up as a sighted kid and always wanted to be a football player. At least he wanted this career until he was 10 or so. Due to diabetes, he started to become blind during his last year of high school. It took about 10 months to go from having 20/20 vision to being totally blind. After high school, he got some training in the skills of blindness. In Arkansas, he was taught how to use a short cane and learned to read Braille, and then he came back to Louisiana and enrolled in college. I was very lucky, he says, because my university is in the town of Ruston. At about that time, the Louisiana Center for the Blind was opening. The director of the center found me, took me to the state convention of the National Federation of the Blind in Louisiana. I had always enjoyed teaching, doing tutoring when I was in high school. The idea stuck with me that I'd like to be a teacher, but I had never heard of a high school math teacher who was blind. I thought it was out of the question. I wanted to be just like the high school math teachers that I'd had, and I did not want to teach at a school for the blind. Not that there's anything wrong with teaching at a blind school, but I wanted to be right in the mainstream. At the Louisiana Center, I acquired personal confidence, undoubtedly the most important characteristic of all. Until that time, I had never had it. I had seen it in other blind people, and I knew that it might be mine maybe in the future. But because I acquired confidence at the center, I knew that I could teach. I learned that my blindness is just another part of me, as is my height or my being right-handed. Blindness is no longer something that overwhelms me or predominates my life. It is not the defining characteristic of my personality. I worked my way through the courses, and I did just fine. My first year of teaching was challenging, exciting, interesting, and fun. There were a lot of sleepless nights and hard work. Grades and papers must be turned in on time. If grades are due today, no teacher can expect to get extra time. The skills I use in the classroom are basic. My high-tech equipment consists of a slate and stylus, a tape recorder, and masking tape. Tom has the duties of a full-time teacher, including chaperoning, and he sells popcorn at the basketball games. He says recently he had a chance to talk to a physics teacher who has been teaching for a long time, but is now starting his first year as a blind teacher next fall. We all help each other. Together we can demonstrate that given training and opportunity, blind people can compete successfully in all areas of education.
We're visiting with Malia Dubay this afternoon, or today, it may not be afternoon when you were listening, and you were telling us that you participated in some track and wrestling, and what all kinds of athletics did you
do? Well, not wrestling, I was a cheerleader.
Yeah. Oh, you were a cheerleader.
Yeah, the wrestling team was for the boys, and then we, you know, and we went to different tournaments as some of the people that have been on your show before. You know, you go to the different schools for the blind all over the states and stuff. And the track team was fun. I was mostly in throwing and running events and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a good time with it. I wasn't any kind of athletic star. I'm a little on the short side, actually about 4'11".
That's a little on the short side.
Yeah, and I'm not that physically strong or anything like that, but I had a lot of fun doing it, and that was the whole object of the whole thing for me.
Yeah. But they, at that time, and I understand they're doing a lot of this now, they let you go in high school to just the regular public school.
Yeah,
and
classes.
To classes there. And so you were with sighted kids, but they, I guess, the sighted kids have anything to do with you? Or they just kind of keep
really.
You?
I mean, I never got to know maybe a couple people in the class. That was about it. I mean, we'd go in there, and it was hard enough going into a big classroom when you're used to. Our classes were fairly small at Batavia.
Yeah.
They were like, I don't know, maybe 10 kids max, something like that.
And now you got 100.
Yeah, and you're going through this huge, big school, and I had just, that was the year after I had lost my vision, so my mobility was, I was working on it, but I wasn't really all that great. And it was scary stuff, you know, to go into a big high school and have to deal with all these kids that you didn't know, and you didn't have a chance to get to know.
And at that age, you're easily embarrassed.
Oh yeah.
You haven't figured out yet that nobody really cares,
mm-hmm.
and that you're on your own, and they may laugh at you, but they don't really care, and they're not all watching you. But you didn't know that at
and
age.
And you feel like they are watching.
Oh, at age 16,
yeah.
it's a terrible time of children's lives, and so there you were going to, but you survived it.
Oh yep, and. Just to go on a little bit later, I graduated in the late 70s from Batavia, and my parents really, really wanted me to go on to college. Now we get to the real interesting part.
All right. Now we get to the interesting part. I'm ready.
I maybe not don't sound like it. You know, I've been saying that I participated in all these activities and stuff, and I was a bit of a rebel. I did some pretty bad stuff when I was... I had enough room restrictions and dorm restrictions when I was there at the blind school.
Uh-huh.
I was a bit of a rebel.
That's good. So was I. Go ahead.
Anyway, basically because I had met some people that I knew from camp in Vermont who lived in the same town but were going to college. They were visually impaired, but they were already graduated from... various schools, and they were going to this college, and I thought it was the coolest thing in the world to just go down there and have a good time with those guys. you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were all free. They did, you know, they were out of their parents' home and out of their...
How did you get to them? You were
walk.
You were at the blind school. Did they let you off?
Sometimes.
And sometimes
I don't know if I want to...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's surely the statutes have run out.
Okay.
And they
I got lucky. I got this my senior year. We had some rooms that were at the end of the dormitories.
Yes.
Facing the street.
Yes.
And there just happened to be a great big rock right under my window that I could reach.
And you could drop down to the rock.
And away I went.
And away we go with her little chain in her hand.
Just make sure. Well, it was only a couple of blocks to go down there where all these guys were living. And just make sure that I knew what time the night watchman was coming around and what time the house parent was going to check the beds. And I had a good roommate who would cover for me when she needed to. And,
uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. It was... yeah, I was...
Well.
Anyway... I got out of school, and Mom and Dad wanted me to go to...
But this all was going on during the blind school, and you had all these restrictions, so obviously they caught you.
They never caught me out, actually, at night. I was always late coming back. I'd go out in the evening, and, after supper and homework and whatever practices were going on, and you didn't get much free time there, as you probably know, didn't get much free time, but we did have some in the evenings, and so I'd hop down there, like I said, it was only a block or so, and stay down there until the very last minute when I had to run back to school, but we'd make our plans.
Well, let me just ask you this. When you got back to school, were you sober?
Oh, Lord. most of the time. I would say most of the time. I didn't quite...
Occasionally, you didn't get into that.
I did, but I mean, you can only just go so far. You had to get past these house parents. You had to go into the main hallway of the dorm, and the common room was right in the middle. And when you got in, you had to tell them you were in. So, Lord, you didn't want to go in there smelling like beer or booze of any kind because they'd catch you.
But then sometimes after lights out, would you go back out?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah. I got caught mostly for being late. I pushed it to the last minute, and I just wouldn't come back on time, and I'd get back in 5-10 minutes late, and there I go again.
Well, let me just say, without revealing any stories of my own, that my blind school experience wasn't that much different than yours.
Okay.
I did kind of the same thing, and one of these days when I know you a little better, I'll tell you about it.
Okay.
Maybe she'll tell you about it. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. But anyway, but they did let you graduate, and you walked across stage, got your diploma.
Actually, I was a salutatorian.
Of your class.
Of my class.
So you were a bright child academically, but you wanted to have fun.
I wanted to have fun,
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with wanting to have fun.
So, with that in mind, I took the SAT tests, and the SATs came back in that supposedly I wasn't 4-year college material. I was supposed to be 2-year college material.
What did you do, not study for the test?
I don't remember us having any studying for the test. I really don't. I remember taking it, and it was huge. A lot of big Braille. It was all written out in Braille, and it was just, we did it the whole day. I remember taking these tests. But when the marks came in, I was kind of, encouraged to apply to a community college, which is just fine. Except for the fact that I'd worked in a couple of places during the summer, various types of jobs that my parents had helped me get, and babysitting and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to get out of high school and work for a year or so.
Okay.
And my parents really didn't, they wanted me to go to college. So I went to college, and I didn't make it. I dropped out after a year, and I met a guy from Canada, and that's why I'm here.
You married a guy from Canada?
I came to Canada and married him, and we kind of...
And that was...
I took off.
That's how you got to Canada.
Yep. I took off.
Well, little rebel girl, I understand. I did kind of basically the same thing, and we're not doing me, we're doing you.
Yeah.
So you married this sighted guy?
Yep. I was only 19, 20 at the time, and without saying anything, I don't want to say anything bad, but the marriage was brief. I have two wonderful children, which is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
And they're his—they're his children.
Yes, and they are now 22 and 19 years old, and very independent young ladies.
But as a partner, you didn't get along. But you
there were various things, yeah.
You had children, and that was a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we separated, and I did the single mom thing for quite a bit.
Of course, that left you totally blind with two children.
Yes.
Which has got to be absolutely terrifying.
It was not an easy time in my life, and I won't try to gloss it over. Anybody who is listening out there who's been a single parent can tell you it is not an easy thing to be.
Well, and it's made even more difficult by this little inconvenience you had.
Yeah.
Of no sight.
I had moved for various reasons. I had moved out of the town that my husband and I were living in to a new place. The Canadian National Institute for the Blind, which is the main, thing for us guys up here far as any kind of rehab mobility stuff, they were very good about giving me mobility so I could get around in my new setting. I did not have a guide dog at that point, although I had had one before. So I was traveling with two little kids with a cane, basically. And I got around. Did it.
And these children both have good vision.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Now, but you didn't go back home.
No, I didn't. I probably could have at that point.
Well, you know you could have. There's no question. Yeah. Of course you could have.
Yeah, I could have. However, I chose to stay in Canada, or at least I was, And then a few years after, I started to date a man, and we were married for a very happy 15 years. He passed away a few years ago. So I've had a lot of good luck and a lot of bad luck in my life.
I'd say that's probably true of all of us. So
yeah.
So your children could see, and there you were. At what age were they when you and your husband agreed to disagree?
About between 1 and 2 and say 4 and 5. Right there about. They
so
were really tiny.
The 4 and 5-year-old could help you some.
Very much so. She learned her colors helping me sort out socks.
I bet she did, and probably learned to read it before most kids.
She did. She actually learned to read.
Now these are both girls.
Yep.
Both girls.
Yep.
I'd say that was good, and it probably is because. Well, for one thing, you could all go to the same public bathroom.
Yeah, yep.
Just to be honest about it. Right, and so you separated and you realized that I'm going to have to make these kids a living. So what did you do? Because you had no college. You agreed to flunk out of that.
Yeah, I agreed. When I was younger and the kids were younger, they still do somewhat. Of course, the health care up here is different than you guys's, so that wasn't really a worry. They had a disability pension.
I understand your health care is better.
It's slipping, but it's still, I guess. I don't know. I guess each state is different, maybe, possibly.
In the United States?
Yeah.
No, it's all federal government. It's all Medicare. They're talking about now. Everybody's talking about improving it, but I don't know whether they will or not.
Yeah.
But anyway, you had a blind pension, so you had,
a
little income.
Yeah. When you say a little, it is a little.
Oh, it is.
Oh, yeah. So I survived, and.
Well, you had to go to work. I mean, you had to.
I had to. Well, I used to babysit for extra money. That was what I did. I mean, it was all unofficial, et cetera, but that's what I did to make some extra. I had young children. I was already taking care of young children. And during that brief time between, like, the summer jobs and the year of college and stuff like that, I had worked in a daycare center.
Okay.
And so I knew what it was like to take care of young children.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I offered to babysit, and a few of my neighbors who were working took me up on it. So, you know.
So that provided you with enough income to barely scrape by.
Scraping was about the size of it. Yes.
We're using the right word there, aren't we? Huh?
Yeah.
Scraping by.
Yeah.
You're like some of the rest of us, me mainly. You made life awful tough on yourself, didn't you?
Oh yeah.
You made life awfully a lot harder than it really had to be.
No regrets, because I wouldn't be the type of person I am today if I wouldn't have made.
Well, you are the sum of where you've been and what you've done. So
yeah.
You're right, you wouldn't be, but you did. You made things hard on yourself. I did too. I was a dumb kid. I didn't know. I thought I knew, but I didn't. Of course, I didn't.
Yeah.
And so you raise these children. Did you stay? Were you stay home mom all the time with the kids?
I stayed at home until, like I said, I had met my husband there. And
your second husband, yeah.
My second husband, he encouraged me to go back to school and get my degree. And I started taking correspondence courses and, you know, going part-time and stuff. But basically, yeah, I was a stay-at-home mother for several years when the kids were younger. Yes, my kids. I think they thought I was always in school. Like I was always doing something, learning something, taking a course, you know. And then I should say too that with the music, when I first came to Canada, that's before the kids were born. That was my younger days of wild and woolly playing music and traveling all over the place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I basically, after that, when I was a single mom, and after, just did it for pleasure, you know, you know, it was a hobby. And then I didn't get back into playing or singing or anything like that until I was in my 40s, late 30s, early 40s again.
Let's take our second little break, and we'll get back and talk a little bit more about your adult life and talk about what you do now.
Okay.
All right.
Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now with this week's Blind Site, here's Don Shaw.
You know, it sure is fine to find a bargain on something every once in a while. I want to talk for a minute about a website I go to from time to time to look at prices on things, shop around a little bit, see what I might want to pick up, usually for a real good price. It's called Overstock.com. I do like a lot of the prices over there. They have their stuff in categories, everything from electronics to household items to outdoor products to, I guess, anything and everything in between. An impressive selection of products. If you're looking for a deal on something, or if you've already found something, you know what you want, you know the model of it, go and check them out and compare a price and see if you're getting a good deal or not. Go to www.overstock.com. I will give them a screen reader friendliness rating of a 5. There's a lot of links and different things on their pages to kind of wade through. But once you do, you can find what you're looking for. Hopefully you can anyway. Until next time, I'm Don Shaw. Keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sight.
Malia Dubay is our guest today, and she's had a most interesting life as a blind person. She pushed all the buttons, did all the things that the so-called normal or sighted kids do. She got married too young, had kids too young, lived on welfare for a while. Well, not welfare, but the pension that they give the blind sang in honky tonks. You've had a quite a life. I admire you.
Would you like to know about my most interesting job?
I want to know about your most interesting job. You tell me. Okay. I'm going to get me a cup of coffee. Go ahead.
Okay. When I first came to Canada after rebelling and dropping out of school and stuff like that, I and my husband, he had a job set up in very northern Ontario. And coming from a suburban environment in the States, this job was in a timber camp, a bush camp.
Now, this is your first husband.
This was my first husband.
Okay.
And the original plan was that I would get a place in town and stay there while he did his thing working out in the bush and stuff like that and logging and that kind of thing. Because most of the time, that's how it works.
Uh-huh.
Well, couldn't find a place in town, and just so happened that the cook, who was an Aboriginal woman in the camp, needed an assistant. The assistant had quit. So from a suburban home and environment kind of in New York State, and from a residential school, I worked for a year before my first child was conceived in a bush camp with no running water, wood stove, and the whole works. Went right into frontier life, right back to the basics.
And you were the assistant cook.
I was, and cleaner, and God knows what else. And the boss also needed somebody to type up orders and stuff like that. He couldn't type. He had a typewriter, but he was couldn't type. And when he found out I could type, and when he found out we had a radio, a phone that was a radio phone that you could use, and he found out that my phone skills were fairly decent, I was doing that as well, like typing up the orders and doing that kind of thing. And
So many blind people would be afraid, and I'm sure you were too, but you did it.
When you're young like that, you get this feeling of, oh, I'm invincible, nothing can, I had a few scary times out there in the bush. It was different than anything I'd ever experienced before. Yeah, we camped and fished and everything when I was a kid, but this was totally different. There was no running water in there. You had to carry water in buckets from the spring, and it was cooking on a wood stove, and wow, it was really.
So, could you go to the spring and get water? I mean,
you
learned your way without a cane.
Yeah, pretty much, because you had to carry the bucket.
Yeah, because back then you could hear well enough to hear all the trees and the echoes and do the thing that we.
Yeah,
that,
and there are bears up here, you know.
Well, I've heard that. I don't know it, but I've been told that.
Oh, there are bears up here. I met a few.
Which reminds us of the great joke about the bear coming after the guys in the woods. And the guy said, how fast can the bear run? He said, I don't have to worry about that. I just worry about how fast you run. All I have to do is outrun you. But you could walk to the spring and get water and bring it back. And so you ended up, but you did a lot of cleaning, a lot of scrubbing of pots and pans.
And cleaning floors and doing all that kind of stuff and peeling a mountain of potatoes because those lumberjacks can eat.
And then they realized that you had some academic skills and you could do the phone fairly well. So what did you do? You were calling, selling?
It was like taking orders from different places, mines and stuff like that, because they cut timber for the supports for the mines and took orders for various types of lumber and stuff. And he needed these things typed out and, letters that he had to type and stuff like that, and I'd do dictation. I'd taken a transcription course in school, so I was at the school for the blind.
Uh-huh.
Remember, some of us were into the business courses, and we took the transcription. You could, by tape. So it wasn't too hard to listen to him talk and me type.
He would dictate. He would do this on a dictaphone, old dictaphone. And and now when you were taking orders, or somebody called and wanted to buy some timber, some lumber, some raw lumber.
I'd learn about that.
And so how would you take your notes? Would you do that in Braille?
I had a slate and stylus. I'm not too good with it, but I did have one. And then I got myself a tape recorder and just kind of spoke what I heard on the phone into the tape.
Yeah, that works. That works. That would work good.
Yeah.
Okay. What an experience, and what a, something, you know, now that it's done, I'm sure it was hard on you, because it was a lot colder than you'd ever been.
Oh, yeah. And just the whole, you know, being there, we were a good ways out of town, and we didn't get into town, I'd say about every 2 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
And just the whole, it was different. It was
anything. Now you lived in what? In what sort of housing did they house people?
Up there was a we had quarters separate because it was two couples, and then there was a bunkhouse for the single guys. And after a while, I did get a room in town, thankfully, and could, you know, I was still working there, but I could like travel back and forth.
But there was another woman.
I learned a lot from her.
She was this was the cook, or this was somebody else's.
She was a cook, main person. She did the shopping for the camp and everything.
And her husband worked there.
Yeah, her husband was the man on the big saw.
And so, and you were her helper.
Yeah.
And you got along with her fine, and this was what a wonderful experience for a blind person. I admire you that you had nerve enough to do this. I guess it's like a lot of things we do at the time. It you didn't realize how much nerve it took. You just did it.
You just did it, and you just didn't. When I tell people about this stuff, you know, I do a lot of. We're trying to get into the now. When I do a lot of speaking engagements, or try to, for CNIB and for other types of organizations. And sometimes, once in a while, these old stories will come out, and people will kind of look and go, "Oh my goodness," you know. But at the time, you were living it, so you just did it, and you didn't think anything really of it, you know.
Yeah. It was the way it became a little way of life. How long did this?
A year. And when I got to be expecting my first child, I just said, "I'm not living out here anymore."
That's what I was going to say. And part of the time you were pregnant, carrying water from the spring.
Yeah, just I was at the end of the year. I found out, and my ex-husband got another opportunity for a job up in Elliott Lake, which was a mining town, which was booming at the time. It was just uranium mining. And they were hiring people from all over Canada to work in these mines. And so we went up there. And it was that was a different kind of thing, too. It was I'd never been in a mining town during a boom season. And, boy, it was different. There were people from all different provinces in Canada there. And very exciting. A lot of young families. It was a nice place to live.
You always think of I think people sort of romanticize those kinds of things and think, well, that would be a lot of fun, the boom town. You can hear the piano player playing Camptown Racetrack and saloons.
They had it. And that was one thing. the music situation up there, because they had all these guys who were working and making all this money and stuff like that, the entertainment was incredible. You know,
did you get
people in?
Did you get a chance to work to do some singing up there?
Not professionally, no. Just for fun, though. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was just such an exciting time.
All right. Well, let's move into to kind of now what you do now. So we have you up to your raising your children
now.
Do what now?
I'm in my 20s now.
You're in your 20s now. Well, we need to move you on to age 30. And what you went back to college and got a degree in what?
I just graduated 2 years ago from Laurentian University up here in Sudbury with a degree in social work.
Oh, so this is a new thing for you.
This is fairly new. I mean, it took me a long time to get this degree because, as I said, I was going, taking correspondence courses for a while.
Raising kids,
and then I finally got a chance to actually go to attend classes at the university.
Yeah.
So I... you know, and I finished off that way. So it worked out, but it did take a long, long time. I'd say good 7 or 8 years to get the full degree.
I know sighted people who've taken that long, so mm-hmm. that's not a blind thing. I mean, that's just the way it was. Like I said, you were raising children. You had to.
And I had an illness in the family. My husband was very ill with cancer. So, you know, with all that, I just couldn't take a full course load. It just wasn't happening. So I finally got it, and me and my guide dog, my last one that just retired here a little while ago, walked down the aisle and got my degree.
Got that diploma.
Yeah, that was one of the proudest. And when they said that I graduated with honors, cum laude,
yeah.
That just did it, boy. I couldn't believe that.
Well, are you a computer user?
I am. I use JAWS.
Use JAWS and
Open Book. And
that's how you got a chance to use some of that in the last few years of college, didn't you? Because we had that by then.
I had had a computer with Arctic on it before. It wasn't a really good computer, but it was top of the line when I first got it. And so I've been using speech for quite a few years,
mm-hmm.
but now with this, we've got a great computer, and I didn't know you could do all the things that you can do. It's just fascinating to me. I didn't have the capability. I had a single channel sound card, so when the JAWS was on, you had to turn the JAWS off to listen to music or do anything else. Just very recently, I've had technology that's enabled me to see what all the computer can do. So it's been neat.
It has opened up a tremendous world for blind people.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We will never be on parity or on par with our sighted brethren in that we can't do graphics, and there's a lot of things we can't do that the computer does, and we probably fall further behind every day. Mm-hmm. But we can do so many more things, because I'm not a braille user, so I had before computers I could only communicate with you one way. I could talk to you, or I could make you a tape. Now I can write copy.
Okay.
I can write, because I'm a radio person. I can write commercials. I can write articles for the newspaper. I've got a couple of chapters of a book. Whether I'll ever finish it or not, who knows? But aren't computers are just I can't say enough about it. They ought to give a blind kid one when he's born.
I agree.
Now, and so you got this degree, and you've gone to work for the Canadian equivalent of the Commission for the Blind.
Right. I was lucky enough that a contract became available. A lady that was working as the worker for the seniors, the older adults,
mm-hmm.
Was going off on a maternity leave, and it was a year-long contract. So I got that right out of university, and I worked there up until last July, and finished my contract. And right now, I am in the unenviable position of being in between jobs. My guide dog retired in August, so I'm also, to my mind anyway, in the unenviable position of waiting for a guide dog as well.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at right now. I am looking for work. I've got a few things going. Hopefully something will come up. I might be in the right place at the right time. Who knows?
That's how people find jobs. Yeah,
I'm doing a lot of volunteer work. Just I'm not giving them too much. I'm giving them about half a day a week or so, but various agencies. But I figure if I'm there, and they know that I'm there, and they see me, because I'm a fairly recent immigrant to Sudbury, where I'm living now,
mm-hmm.
and so I don't know a whole lot of people in town here in the social service sector. So the way to get a job is to get out there and get seen and get known, and they know you're out there, and you're looking for work. Well,
Would say that by the time it's over, you'll know them all, Malia.
Oh, I'm probably pretty sure I will.
I would think that you would. You seem to have had a very full life. Nothing has held you back from what you wanted to do, and there's no doubt in my mind that will continue. And have you turned 40, or are you fixing to be 40?
I'm turned 40.
You just
quite
turned
a while ago, yeah.
Quite a while ago?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask.
No.
You cannot tell by your voice. You sound a lot younger than 40.
No, that's what people tell me, and they say, thankfully, that I look a lot younger than 42, which is very nice of them.
Yeah.
But no, just to give you an idea, my oldest daughter, who I'm very proud of, is going to graduate from university this year.
Is that right?
She's 22.
Is she still living at home?
No, she's in a different city, and my younger girl is 19 this year. So,
and neither one of them live with you now?
Not right presently. The 19-year-old is in transition period right now. So.
But you have good relations with both of them?
Oh, very. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure as they got older, they helped Mom a lot.
Yeah, and now I'm starting on this whole new adventure with this partner of mine who we're planning on getting married in a year or two. I hope things work out, and he's totally blind as well.
Is that right? And he you told me the other day, but tell the listeners what does he do? He's quite a guy himself.
He's the high technology consultant for the Canadian National Institute for the Blind here in Northern Ontario, and he works doing computer training and assessments and all that kind of stuff. So
that's how you got really into computers.
Very much.
He has helped you a lot.
Yeah.
So, well, if you're going to deal with computers, you need those experts around.
Oh, it's nice. It's nice.
Well, he would certainly be someone that I would love to interview sometime.
I'll keep telling him.
Have you told him? I told you the other day.
Yes, I did, and he's still thinking about it. I won't say, he's... I think you said this, and I will agree with you. I'm definitely the talker of the family.
Yeah, I noticed that I've done three interviews today, and it would be a toss-up between you and the first guy, Jerry Hallaton, was a talker also.
Oh, good.
But then if you don't talk, this show goes nowhere.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. I've done interviews, a few of them before, too, so I kind of know, and I've listened to your show. I've been listening to the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me.
Yeah.
For quite a few months now, so I kind of had an idea of what you guys were looking for, what I was going to talk about.
Yeah.
So that helped a lot.
Well, you have to talk, or sometimes you get somebody you got to pull information out of. Well, you haven't been one of those. You've been a good interview. You've had a good life, and I don't know you, but I would think you'd be a delightful person.
Oh, thanks.
And,
well, you guys sure sound like you're having fun on the Handyman show, so you never know. Someday, maybe if I get down to Texas, who knows?
I'm having more fun than I ought to be having at 63. and people tell me I look my age.
Oh, wow. You
Malia,
don't sound it.
Thank you much, and we'll conclude our little show today and just say, don't go outside and everything will be fine.
Oh, I'm hoping not to. I want to stay warm and stay inside for the weekend. I don't think we're going to be going too far this weekend. So anyway, thanks for the interview, and I've had fun. And I'll be listening. Oh, do you know when this is going to air?
I'll call you before it does.
I'd really appreciate it. I got a lot of people down in the States who want to listen to this.
Good deal. Hold on just a minute, all right?
Yep.
Well, we always need guests. Blind Like Me, blindlike me at txucom.net. Blind Like Me, all one word, at txucom.net. That will get you in touch with me. Or you can call me at 936-634-9500. Always need guests for these shows. Thank you much for listening. See you next week. More Blind Like Me. Stay tuned for the Blind Handyman. You're listening on ACB Radio.